Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. As Texas legislators push their initiative to redraw congressional districts, New York's Democratic political leaders are discussing the possibility of redistricting in the Empire State. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The Texas House of Representatives has passed a new congressional map that has the potential to flip five Democratic-held districts ahead of 2026 midterm elections, during which much of Congress is up for re-election. It's expected the Texas State Senate will vote on the map as soon as this evening. The gerrymandering has caught the eye of New York politicians. Governor Kathy Hochul responded by issuing a scathing statement late Wednesday, which says in part, "Tonight, Texas Republicans delivered Donald Trump the rigged map he demanded."
"I didn't ask for this. I wish everybody played fair. But if you're going to change the rule of the game in the middle of it, then I'm not sitting on the sidelines and letting that happen."
The Democrat has vowed to try to move forward with mid-decade redistricting in New York, a process that would involve changing the state's constitution, which prohibits gerrymandering and specifies that redistricting occur once a decade. At a Thursday morning event in Schenectady, New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hasty told reporters, "It's not that easy to redistrict, a process that in New York occurs under the purview of an independent commission."
"In order to do a change to the Constitution, you have to have two consecutive legislatures pass it, and then it's put before the voters. So whether we pass something, this is year one of this legislature. So first passage doesn't have to be this year. We can do it next year. And so the earliest that something could go before the voters is 27. So are we having those discussions? Yes.
110th District Assembly Member Phil Steck says constituents have been contacting legislators about the issue.
"They don't understand that the redistricting in the state of New York is constitutional, and that would, as the speaker pointed out, require passage of a redistricting change bill in two consecutive legislatures and then approved by the voters. So we can't do it now, even though many of our constituents would like us to."
Hasty said he is open to speaking with Hochul about redistricting, but ultimately, New York's governors are not involved in constitutional amendments. He added that even if legislators came back for a special session, redistricting doesn't have traction yet.
"Most people believe the current commission doesn't work. Like I said, you're just asking for a deadlock when it's 5-5. And so we're just going over a different, you know. When I was in college, I took a class called game theory. And, you know, you have different trees and different branches. So we're just discussing that. There's nothing definitive at this point."
Changes, if any, to New York's congressional districts via a redistricting plan wouldn't go into effect until the 2028 elections. The redistricting debate in New York comes as California lawmakers are advancing a plan to overhaul the state's congressional map that would counter the looming changes in Texas.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You might remember last winter that New York saw a massive road salt shortage. A large part of that shortage was triggered because of the difference between two words, may and shall. Jung Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network has more.
Around the start of the year, the state had to acquire 60,000 tons of emergency road salt supplies, costing more than $6 million. Communities all across the state were affected.
"You know, clearly something happened on the state end."
That's Carmelo Mantello, the mayor of Troy and Rensselaer County. The problem was that an American-based road salt company, American Rock Salt, failed to get enough road salt to its customers. That's 29 out of 31 counties that they were supposed to deliver road salt to across the state. American Rock Salt usually doesn't get that many contracts, but it did this time around because the state agency that issues the contracts tweaked one word from a state law. The law says the state may pick American Mine Salt companies for contracts, but the state agency in its contract bid proposal said the state shall prefer American Mine Salt companies. The agency said they did that to show that they were fully implementing the law. That ultimately benefited American Rock Salt, which is based in Livingston County. Mantello said American Rock Salt had fallen massively behind on getting road salt to Troy.
We ordered, I think, 6,800 tons. I think we got 100 tons. So it wasn't even filling one of our bays.
The company said it dug into its reserves and mined more salt to try to get supplies to counties. The state, meanwhile, says it wants money back from American Rock Salt because of the shortage. Now, the state is considering which companies to make contracts with for this upcoming winter. And the state agency overseeing the bidding process says this time around, it's ignoring the state law. Harry Bronson, a state assemblyman who represents Rochester, wrote the law in question, the Buy American Salt Act. He says the state agency is taking the wrong policy approach to ignore the law entirely.
The wording of the bill is not the problem.
Bronson said the law is pretty flexible, and it gives the state the option to give preference to companies that mine salt here in the U.S., but he says the law doesn't require it every single time. The state agency says it will make contract awards later this fall. In Rochester, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with Blair Horner, Senior Policy Advisor for NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group, who shared his concern about the federal cuts that could soon endanger New York's finances.
Well, I think the blame should fall squarely on President Trump and the Republicans in the House and the Senate. I mean, they're the ones who approved a budget that savages services for Americans and enacted a incredible tax cut for the wealthy. So the shift of resources from poor to rich. In New York, yeah, I mean, everyone sort of knew what was going to happen, but the state's fiscal year starts on April 1st. The budget was done around May 1st. And the feds hadn't acted yet. In fact, they acted in July. So it's hard to predict exactly what's going to happen. You never can tell. Things could implode. The budget that the state did included a measure that allowed the governor, if there was really deep cuts this fiscal year, to act unilaterally. But the impact on the current state budget is relatively minor. And it's really the cuts in the out years that Comptroller DiNapoli sort of flagged as a big problem.
Well, and let's get a little further into those cuts. So I was talking with the Assembly Minority Leader, that's Will Barclay, a Republican, and he was trying to tell me that no. The only people who are being cut from SNAP benefits were people who need to work now because they were getting benefits they don't deserve, or others who may be getting benefits they don't deserve. What is this argument all about here? Is that true?
Well, the proposals that were advanced, both in terms of food stamps, now known as SNAP, and Medicaid, a lot of them deal with having work requirements. But in addition to that, new bureaucratic obstacles. So, for example, you have to sign up, you have to prove that you have a job and everything else. Now you're talking about the most vulnerable people in society when it comes to something like health insurance. Proving that they're meeting the requirements of the law. And so it's widely viewed, the Congressional Budget Office agrees, that as a result of those new procedures, about 10 to 12 million Americans are going to lose their health insurance. And so, I mean, You can make an argument. You can sort of spin that this is about making people work. But what it's about is throwing people off the Medicaid rolls and people not having health insurance. That's effectively what it is. And it depends on how you view health insurance. Do you view it as something that people should have as a right of being an American? Or do you view it as some sort of luxury that people have to fight for in order to get? We view it as more of a principle that should be that every American should have health insurance so that, you know, people don't decide whether or not they're going to get sick. They get sick and they should have health insurance to cover them. And what the Congress has done at the president's request is throw millions of Americans and probably around a million New Yorkers off the Medicaid rolls. And God knows what happens to them after that.
Yeah, and basically what I said to Barclay was, is New York getting less money or not? He said, well, you're going to get less money. So the bottom line is less money for New York. Like you said, because of the rules and the regulations, what's going to happen with people who can't meet them? There was a great deep dive, I believe it was on John Oliver's show, about the amount of paperwork that people have to do to secure some of these benefits. While the Republicans want small businesses and others that they like to get rid of all the paperwork that has to be done, make it simpler so we're not caught in red tape, the exact opposite is happening with people who have the least.
Yeah, and people who are vulnerable. I mean, these are people who are on the lower income scale in America, and there are people who are struggling just to survive. And to add to their misery, additional bureaucratic obstacles in order to get something as basic as health insurance or food is, I think, cruel. And as a result, people will get sick. People will get sicker than they should. People will die earlier than they should because of the policies enacted. And it's not because, again, the theory behind this, what the Congress did, is not because the nation's debt is grown so dramatically that it's out of control, which, by the way, it has. They made it worse by advancing tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. And those individuals, the wealthiest Americans, don't need any help. They should pay higher taxes. After World War II, which is the last time we had debt at roughly the levels we have it now, they enacted tax rates that were double, if not triple, what they are now in order to pay off the debt. And the Republican strategy would make some sense if they were trying to do that, but they're not. They're in fact, they advanced the budget that makes the nation's debt worse, dramatically worse.
With that said, going forward, what can New York Governor Kathy Hochul and the legislature do in the coming session? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for any state for that matter, but certainly New York. I mean, if you care about the poor and the working low-income individuals that won't have health insurance, the state's going to have to try to figure out ways to redesign their programs and to, if necessary, come up with revenues to provide that safety net for those people that need it. And so there are different things that the state should do. One of them is to review their economic development and tax benefit programs and see if those work, if they work. and if they don't, then you should get rid of them and use the additional revenues for these kinds of programs. If they are working, but they're really not benefiting society more than taking care of people that need that are needy, then you should close them down and use those revenues too. The state spends billions of dollars on economic development and tax incentive programs. I think that there should be a careful review of all of them, particularly the ones that benefit the oil companies, which are not really doing anything other than making money hand over fist and ruining the climate. Why not close the benefits, the tax benefits that exist in state law, generate money for the state? So that's one of the ways you could look at it. Another big way to look at it would be if the wealthy are getting big tax cuts as a result of the federal proposal, why not claw back some of the benefits to those individuals and reprogram it for state programs? It's going to be hard. The state is going to be facing big deficits, and it's going to be hard to deal with them. They're not going to get smaller over time unless the Congress reverses itself. And so the state is going to basically have to figure it out on its own. But looking at wasteful tax expenditures or economic development programs and seeing if you can re-engineer the state's personal income tax code to get some of the benefits that the Congress just gave the wealthy. Those seem like two obvious places to get started.
Yeah, I'm confused electorally as well when it comes to citizens and voting. Let's just say, you know, the New York Republicans are supporting the Trump administration and its policies and parroting them here in New York, but, you know, they have to get reelected. And the question is, you know, for example, I'm reading a report right now from Tom DiNapoli saying that even as state funding for senior services has increased, thousands remain on wait lists for in-home care, meals, and other essential support. And data reporting by the New York State Office of Aging makes it difficult to know who is being left behind or where seniors in trouble. You know, folks who are on all levels of the income scale could be Republican. Are they thinking about the people they're hurting and how they're going to vote next time?
Well, the package that was advanced was really pushed by the president. And the key component of it was to enact these tax cuts, primarily for the well-to-do. And part of the way that they wanted to sort of deal with how do you pay for at least some of that was to go after these programs that benefited needy Americans. And so it's not going to be that popular, that's for sure. But you generally, the people that are going to the most likely to vote are the people that, you know, as you go up the income scale, you're much more likely to vote. And so I think to some extent, you heard it when you talked to the Assembly Minority Leader, they're going to push their talking points hard and try to say things like, if you want benefits, go get a job. Now, if you are low income or disabled or sick, that's hard to do. And it's certainly not easier to do if you're sick and you don't have health insurance.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the environment. And we've seen what's been happening with the EPA, Lee Zeldin, the former New York congressman, gubernatorial candidate, who's virtually removed regulations. The latest thing they're on is getting rid of the carbon rule for automobiles and removing those regulations. And you prop that up against New York and our Climate Act and other legislation, including the fact that so many experts now say we're so far away and won't make our climate goals. We've got a real problem when it comes to the environment and regulation.
Well, it's really, in many ways, sort of the cuts to the needy are horrible and will cause misery for all of those people. But when you destroy the climate, no one benefits from that. And the impacts are being felt now, but are going to be really terrible in decades to come. And so our children and our grandchildren are going to suffer dramatically because of decisions that were made over the past 20 years. And the Trump administration and the Congress simply don't believe in science. And so because they don't believe in science, they think they can just get rid of all of the alternative energy power sources that were under development and keep relying on fossil fuels, which are the primary cause for the warming planet. And so their decisions will go down in history as one of the worst things that have been decided in human history, because they are accelerating the climate catastrophe that we're all going to endure for years to come.
Blair Horner, Senior Policy Advisor for NYPIRG. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries says he's still deciding whether to endorse Zohran Mamdani for New York City mayor. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind has that story.
Jeffries says he still wonders if the mayoral frontrunner can deliver for working-class voters in his district. Jeffries spoke last week on CNBC.
During the general election, of course, he's going to have to demonstrate to a broader electorate, including in many of the neighborhoods that I represent in Brooklyn, that his ideas can actually be put into reality.
Top Democrats like Jeffries and Governor Hochul still haven't endorsed Mamdani. Their deliberations show how his primary victory increased tensions between the party's moderates and progressives. Jeffries says he is setting up another meeting with Mamdani in central Brooklyn. Mamdani says he's continuing to talk with everybody. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
The city of Newburgh is considering a one-year pilot program that would grant some residents a guaranteed basic income every month. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King explains.
A $450,000 New York State grant already in the city's possession would provide a $300 debit card to a select number of low-income households to help them pay their bills or build savings each month. Director of Planning and Development Alexandra Church says the idea has been in the works for at least a couple years. She presented the pilot at a recent work session of the Common Council.
What we decided was to focus on those who are extremely low income in our community. That ranges from $24,000 and change for a family of one to $34,000 for a family of four. And in overall numbers, it's about 6,000 people that would be eligible. Not all of them will qualify for our pilot, but about 6,000 people, which comes to about 36% of our population.
A recent poll by SUNY New Paltz and the Siena College Research Institute found 78% of families in Orange, Dutchess, Ulster, and Sullivan counties are struggling financially. Roughly 6 in 10 households are living paycheck to paycheck. Cities across the U.S., including nearby Hudson, New York, have been piloting guaranteed basic income or universal basic income programs for years. Proponents say they can help combat income inequality and empower participants to build financial freedom and security. Stanford University's Guaranteed Income Pilots Dashboard, which tracks data from 30-plus pilots nationwide, finds most pilot funds are being spent on retail sales and services, followed by groceries. Still, GPI has its skeptics about whether it really improves indicators like children's health outcomes or school performance. Church says it's hard to predict the results of GPI in one city by looking at programs in others, as these pilots often have individual goals that are specific to their communities. Newburgh, for example, will be studying whether GBI can keep residents in the city and off the streets.
We're trying to keep people here. That's the threshold that we will be studying. What makes it so that people are able to stay in their community?
Church says the pilot would apply to 110 households to start. Participants would be chosen at random from a pool of qualified applicants. Depending on how the pilot performs and whether the city can secure more funds, Church says it's possible that it could be extended or expanded in the future. Members of the Common Council, like Ward 1 Councilmember Giselle Martinez, spoke highly of the idea and seemed eager to get it started.
Honestly, it's 2025. Nobody should be worrying about whether they're going to have a roof over their head or food on their table.
Councilmember at large Omari Shakur expressed concern that the funds could be used against participants to make them ineligible for other income-based social services like food stamps, SSI, or Section 8 vouchers. Church assured that that won't happen. Councilmember at large Robert McLemore, meanwhile, asked whether participants will be restricted in how they spend the money. Church says no, and that's the point.
To say this quite bluntly, there will be 1% of the people in any of these studies that will use it for things that are not positive in their life, but 99% of them will not. And so is it worth it? And that's what we're looking at for that 99% that use it for food and housing and to fix their car and things that are beneficial to their life.
Church says the city still needs to put out a request for proposals to select a nonprofit and research partners to administer the program. It's possible the pilot could begin onboarding as soon as this winter, with payments starting in spring 2026. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
The United Way of the Adirondack region is inviting people to participate in a unique fundraising event, rappelling down one of Plattsburgh's tallest buildings. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
Lakeview Towers is a 9-story, 100-foot-tall building on the south end of the city. United Way President and CEO John Bernardi says they are planning a new fundraising event at the site.
We will have people from across the region rappelling off the top of this building right behind me. We're very excited about it. It's a fun and interesting way to engage the regional community in the important work that we're doing to raise funds for needs across the region.
The United Way has engaged Over the Edge, a professional urban rappelling company that partners with nonprofits for fundraising events. United Way outreach specialist Brian Hartman volunteered at an Over the Edge event last October.
Everyone gets a body harness attached to two different ropes. Every participant will go through a training prior to even getting close to the edge of the building, and you'd practice how to use the devices and so forth. You basically then walk down the side of the building.
You can control your own speed, and you have control while you're rappelling.
Rappelling down a building is not much different than the rock climbing hobby that United Way board member Holly Black enjoys.
That first overwhelming experience, as soon as you tilt your bum a little bit over, it's a little thrilling. I'll use that word. It's thrilling. And then as you get going, it is just really just overwhelming when you can look around and you'll take your time when you're doing it. Look out at our lovely landscape that we have here. It's actually fun. It's just the initial kind of tilting back that's like, oh my goodness. Yeah. But once you get through that, it's great, super easy.
Officials are hoping to raise $75,000 from the event to kick off their fall campaign. Bernardi says what is raised from Over the Edge will go to the United Way's Community Impact Fund,
which is used to address high priority human service needs across the region. Housing related matters are a priority. Mental health continues to be a big priority, and substance abuse counseling as well. Food insecurity, that's just a sampling of some of the challenges that people are facing.
70 people have already signed up for the Saturday, September 13th event, and organizers hope 90 people will be willing to rappel down the outside facade of Lakeview Towers. Board member Sue LeBlanc DeRocher offered a challenge to recruit rappellers.
Wouldn't you just like to throw your boss over the edge? I mean, no, not throw them over the edge. Guide them over the edge. This is your chance to help push your boss really over the edge.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2534 and join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics or the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.